Hello, this is Annie Cassina here, and today I am absolutely delighted to be interviewing Ariane Ode. Ariane works as a chartered psychologist, executive coach, and author. She set up her coaching and development business in 1994. Ode Associates combines business psychology and professional acting. Ariane's clients are executives, directors, hospital consultants, people at work, and members of the public. Ariane works with her clients' intrapersonal world, their values, character, and personality as they relate to the workplace, and with their interpersonal behavior, the skills, strategies, and tactics they employ with their colleagues and clients. She puts her finger on complex dynamics in her clients' lives, which work against their best interests and provides them with additional resources in areas where they feel underpowered. Her method of combining business psychology and professional acting enables rapid progress against coaching goals and creates sustained behavior change. And the reason I'm so excited about speaking to Ariane is, first of all, we come to the field of bullying from different places, but it's a shared passion. And second, she has a cracking sense of humor. So, Ariane, I'm really delighted to be speaking with you today. I know we talked about this a long time ago, and I'm really looking forward to hearing you tell me about bullying in the workplace, because you've just written a book called Free Yourself from Workplace Bullying out on May the 31st, which is absolutely fascinating, really powerful. I read it like you read a novel, which is probably not quite the right approach, but that's how much it inspired me. So let's start at the beginning. What got you interested in bullying in the workplace in the first place?
Well, back in about 1994, I decided to set up my own business so that I could work as a coach. And very early on, I was asked to work by some really quite large banks with people who were perceived to be underperforming. And that was the language that I was introduced to these particular clients around. And I felt quite early on that a lot of them were using behaviour which was not putting them across in the best light, and which was actually making them vulnerable, whether they realised it or not. And most of them didn't, some of them did. But the way in which they were presenting themselves in a really quite robust set of cultures across these banks, where people were abrasive, aggressive, very sort of dominant in their behaviour, and very, they would call it assertive, but very lacking in the capacity to connect or listen or understand or particularly work well with others, was having quite a significant impact on these particular clients who were, I was asked to work with to help them perform better. And although I didn't use the word bullying for a long time, and I didn't frame in my own mind or think about the dynamics that these clients were caught up in as being around bullying, I began over the next 6 to 10 years to think that working with somebody one-to-one who is using behaviour which is natural for them, but which doesn't do them any favours, and which loses them influence, personal power, credibility, and at times prevents them from getting promotions, their actual hard work, their skill set, and their endeavour deserve, needs a very specific approach. And so I started to introduce professional actors into my coaching programmes, and we would recreate the very situations that clients told me were difficult for them to handle, and set up realistic recreations of the most difficult and toxic meetings which my clients were involved in, often one-to-one, but sometimes there'll be three or four actors in the room recreating a meeting. Everyone had had a go at my client, and I would help them discover different behaviour which would change the dynamic that was evolving around them, so that the people who found it easy to have a go at them, to undermine them, to watch them wobble, to say things which were unfair, untrue, or pernicious, could no longer do that easily. And out of that work over a period of 10 or 12 years, I began specifically to talk about bullying behaviour, and eventually wrote a book which Palgrave Macmillan published in about 2009. And since then, really all the work that I've done has been with people who have been bullied, and they're quite clear that that's what's happened. People who've been on the receiving end of significant aggression at work didn't call it bullying, but have learnt that that is actually what's happening, or people who use aggressive bullying behaviour and are in danger of losing their job if they don't change the way they do things.
So you work with bullies as well as the bullied. Did I hear that right?
You did. I don't do it very often. I have, but most certainly I have, right back from those early days I was describing, worked with people who used aggression at work and thought that that was either a good way to manage other people, a necessary trait in the leader, or indeed some of whom were bullied. And more recently, since I've written my books on these subjects, indeed I have again been asked to work with people who have had complaints against them and who use bullying behaviour or use aggression. And I make a clear distinction between people who are bullies and who want to remove power from those they target, be that personal power, organisational power, or both, and people who occasionally, intermittently, or consistently use aggression at work, not because they want to bully and remove power, but because their own emotional self-management skills are underdeveloped. And I will work with both. I find working with people who truly do use bullying behaviour amongst the most challenging work that I do, because my aim is to confront them and help, I want to help them confront themselves and recognise what they're doing and replace their bullying behaviour with effective leadership skills. My work with people who've been bullied is to help them discover what they're doing which inadvertently gives away their power in specific situations where the person they are giving their power to is going to take advantage of that. Not everyone does. There are lots of people at work who will never take advantage of someone who is inadvertently handing over confusion and vulnerability to them in the way they relate. Lots of people just don't. They treat that with great goodwill. But those who would abuse that situation are the ones who will create a bullying dynamic, and it is that dynamic that I want my clients to get themselves out of and confront at the moment of an attack, so that they can preserve their personal power, use their boundaries effectively to protect themselves, and change that bullying dynamic in the moment of it evolving. And that is where they can then regain their power.
That makes an awful lot of sense to me, and my own work has often shown me that people who are in the receiving end of emotional abuse in their personal life, which is another form of bullying, arguably, they kind of know in the abstract what we're talking about, but they don't really get it. So can I ask you how someone would know that they're being bullied? What are the signs that will tell them? Because they should know, but they may not, it seems to me, for a while.
It's really interesting. I get people who have been bullied coming to me through two routes. Either they've read one of my books and they contact me themselves and they say, I identify with this case study or that case study, or this resonates very deeply with me, but they never come and say, I've been bullied. What they do is they identify strongly with the way I've written about the dynamic they've been caught up in. And they recognise that, and they recognise that things have become really difficult for them, and they're not themselves. So amongst that group of people, there is an understanding that the dynamics they're in are not usual. The way they've always handled their time at work and their colleagues is not working with these particular people or that particular person. And they need to do something differently and better, and so they contact me. The second group of people are people who, somebody in their HR department or learning and development department or a caring manager who knows of me will say, right, I think that you should work with Ariane. And, she will help you find more influence or find more better strategies for coping with and being resilient when you're working with XYZ person. And very, very few people come to me and said, I have been bullied. Sorry about that, that's my CCTV system chirping. those occasionally somebody does, and they will say, you know, I'm absolutely certain that I was bullied in this situation or in that situation, but that is very unusual. So my first task with either a group of clients is to help them understand what has happened to them. And I do that not by saying, I think you've been bullied, but by taking them through the dynamics of a bullying relationship and asking them what they connect with. And they come to their own conclusion that that's actually what's happened. And that's a really important principle for me, that I want my clients to be able to come to me and gain extra knowledge, insight, I hope some wisdom, and some very practical strategies that help them come to their own conclusions, because that in and of itself is then empowering. Instead of saying, this isn't working well for me, I'm doing everything I always used to do and it's going desperately wrong, and the more I do it, the worse it gets, they can now say, well, okay, these are highly irregular dynamics. This person is doing that, that, and that. My response is really ineffectual, but very well intentioned. Right, show me something I can do differently now. I think there are two points at which people make the decision to come and see somebody like me. One is when what's happening is so difficult that they feel they have to start looking for extra resources and extra ways of handling it. The other is when someone else says to them, this has gone on for too long now, you need to get some help.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the person in the latter group, they can put up with it for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And that nothing in their mind goes, I really ought to do something about this, or I really ought to start complaining about this. And one of the reasons can be that everyone around them knows it's happening.
Mm.
So in their mind, it's completely open. Everyone can see it. And yet they're just being expected to carry on, and somehow they find the sort of resource and they hang on by their fingernails and they just carry on. But the one thing they find difficult to do is to then go that extra stage and really confront what's happening in a way which will get them help. And that's when they need somebody else to step in and say, right, you need to go and work with somebody like Ariane.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, I totally get that. And that's really why I'm thinking, how do they identify it? How do they sort of get to that place sooner?
Mm.
Is there a way they can get to that place sooner? You know, a lot of my work is about trying to help women to get to the place where they say, oh, God, I can't be with this ghastly man anymore.
Mm. Mm. I think one of the challenges for people in the workplace that makes it difficult for them to do that, where their predisposition is to cope rather than to confront, is the idea, one, everyone knows about it and they're all expecting to get on with it. Two, that means I have no active support. There is no one who actually says to me, gosh, that was a rotten thing he or she just did to you. No one comes up to me after a meeting and says, I'm really sorry that happened, can we talk about it? And so they feel terribly alone. And that makes it much more difficult to ask for help, because it's almost as if all this is happening and everybody knows, people can talk themselves into a mental frame of mind where there is no effective help. And then what they need somebody else to say, yes, there is, look, here are a whole load of books on that subject and this subject, and here's a whole load of coaches who work in that area, pick one of them. And that can be very difficult for people, and sometimes people who've been putting up with it for the longest are the slowest to change initially, because so much of the resource has gone into coping, the thought of changing direction, and actually confronting the fact that they have totally unwittingly and very well-intentionedly enabled the situation by not confronting it sooner. That's immensely challenging, and for some people it causes a kind of mental collapse for a short period of time, where they actually start beating themselves up even worse, not for having been in the situation, but for having let it continue. And those are the challenges which I'm really compassionate towards, because in the way I described it to you, I can see exactly how someone could end up like that. And they're putting more and more resources into beating themselves up instead of actually saying, right, I need to step back and take a look at what is it about the way I think about me and the way I feel about me that enabled me to stay in that horrendous situation for potentially years, and how can I take all that energy and use it to learn how to change the bullying dynamic at the moment of an attack, to learn how to protect myself, and most importantly, to create consequences for the bully. Because it seems that most long-term bullying dynamics go on because there are no consequences. Everyone knows it's happening. Nobody supports the person who's been targeted. Very few people do, and very few people in authority confront the bully, and so it continues because there are no consequences for that bullying person to deal with.
Yeah, I actually went through exactly that scenario myself in a private school. And the head of that school bullied quite randomly. She had a few victims on the go at the time, but anybody could be a victim. Everybody knew it. Nobody would stand up for another person, except for Big Mouth here, who wasn't very well appreciated for it. And it did seem like there were precisely no consequences. But what it did for me was it actually taught me some very harsh lessons about what can happen with people when they're frightened, but also it subverts your view of reality. You know, sort of, it just does. You kind of start to live in a very unfair world. So I think the question is, can anybody be bullied?
I think anybody can be groomed, absolutely. I think absolutely anyone, from someone who's very assertive, robust, confident, right through to someone who has a hard time using assertive behaviour and is therefore more vulnerable, anyone can be targeted or groomed. But I think that the way people behave in the moment of the initial encounter, someone who's potentially looking to target them, has an impact on whether they are successfully moved into a campaign or not. And for me, that does never, ever remove responsibility from the person who's bullying. I would never say that someone who did not know how to protect themselves when they were initially being groomed or in the stages of a campaign is therefore somehow responsible for having been bullied. I would always say the person who's doing the bullying and the targeting is 100% responsible for what they do. And what they're looking for is confusion and vulnerability. So if when they're testing the waters with their grooming behaviours, just to see how this person might react, if I'm a bit robust or a bit aggressive or invade their personal space or say something nasty, just to see how they react. If that person who's being groomed is unable to find a way of going, saw that, no, you're not behaving like that towards me, the chances are they'll be groomed again and again, and it'll then move into a bullying dynamic.
So I'm really fascinated by this concept of grooming. Could you give an example or two? Because I know that people sometimes get example, you know, that we relate to examples sometimes. So in practice, how does that work? I mean, I'm absolutely fascinated by grooming.
For me, grooming is or sometimes a series of encounters between a would-be bully and the person they're thinking of targeting. And what the would-be bully does is test the waters with behaviour that is aggressive, boundary testing, undermining, or in any other way insidious towards the person's self-esteem or their sense of their own effectiveness in their role, or the way in which they see themselves. So some examples might be, and this is one that I've put in the book, an outgoing, friendly, confident, likeable new employee joins her organisation, and she's used to being liked, and she makes an early, very positive impression with all her new colleagues. The one person who's viewing her with a little disdain and a little aloofness and some jealousy and some envy is somebody more senior than her, perhaps a supervisor or her manager, who observes the way this newcomer arrives. Everyone likes her, she builds rapport very quickly. She's become not popular because it's too early, but liked early. And during that first week, the would-be bully is observing this new person do things which she personally finds very difficult to do. She doesn't connect well with people. She isn't warm and friendly. People are not warm around her. They treat her with respect because she's more senior than them, and they report to her, but they absolutely don't like her. But secretly, she'd love to be liked, and she watches this new person coming in who's very likeable and instantly liked and isn't happy. So the grooming happens the first time the two of them are alone, and in the particular example in the book, I've had it in a kitchen. They're in the kitchen at work, and the more senior figure, who's quite a brittle character, turns to the newcomer and looks at her in an aloof, disdainful way and says to her that she finds her quite intimidating. Now, on the surface, that is an odd comment to make about someone who's actually very friendly and well-liked, but it has a more sinister undertone in the example of the book, because what she's doing is, in that moment, she wants to know how a well-judged personal insult, which is completely untrue and which would force the newcomer to see herself in a light which is completely at odds with how she's used to be seen, will cause her to react. And in that moment, the newcomer has two choices. One is to go inward and think, my goodness, what have I done? Why does my new boss think I'm like that? How, what way could I possibly have offended her to the point of her thinking me intimidating, and start to doubt herself, which the newcomer is looking for. She's looking for signs, sorry, the boss is looking for, looking for signs of vulnerability and confusion. Or the newcomer can instantly go something like, well, I don't see myself like that. And what she's saying would be, she'd put all the issues back to the boss. She'd go, no, that's not how I see myself. So liminally, she's saying, you can try and undermine my self-esteem. You can try and get me to see myself in ways I don't like, but I don't see myself like that. And that is the answer to that moment, and it will stop. But if she's doing the first thing and starting to doubt herself and worry, then in that moment, all the senior figure has to do is walk out. And she knows the next time she makes another personal insult or causes the newcomer to see herself in a way which is at odds with her need to be liked, then she knows she's got her, and she can continue to do that and throw her off balance and undermine her whenever she wants to.
So it's really as simple. I mean, it's not simple, but by failing to give an appropriate response, or failing to respond because you're going inward, you can actually play a part in setting up the bullying dynamic. Is that right?
I think that the bullying dynamic is a two-way street.
Yeah.
So it's very much what the bully or would-be bully says and does, but it's also very much what the person who's been grieved or targeted says and does. And it is that latter thing that's so critical for people I work with to learn, that although they feel powerless and helpless, because as far as they're concerned, the bully is all-powerful and often does have organisational power as well as a more vigorous, robust, aggressive, interpersonal way of doing things, they have a lot more influence than they realise. They're not using it. So as soon as they go inwards and start doubting, all their energy goes inwards, they're not managing the moment anymore. They've gone inwards, and they're not present enough to be able to say, no, I'm not taking that, that's not true. And in that moment, the bullying dynamic isn't yet set in stone by any stretch of imagination, but the bully will know, okay, so if I make that kind of comment, you look confused and vulnerable. Right, I'll try that again next time. And I don't think that bullying dynamics get set up straight away. They are a two-way street, and they are about the interactions that evolve between the two, so that it becomes a dynamic when there is an established way of behaving between the two of them that doesn't alter. And it doesn't alter because the bullies learn, right, I'll do this and this. I'll be really aggressive and nasty to you, and I know you'll go on the back foot and stay there. And it's learning how not to go on the back foot, but that if you use a different behaviour in that moment as the person who's being targeted, it will change the dynamic between you in that moment. And that will cause the bully to think, oh, that didn't work. And for some bullies, they only need to know that once to stop and go away. Others need to be shown that several times before they go away. But it is the self-perception that I am helpless and powerless, there's nothing I can do. I'm doing everything I can at the moment, and it's not working, they've got all the power. That is what self-defeats for many of the people that I work with when I first meet them.
Mm.
And it's not true. They are not powerless. but it feels like that because they've been bullied. And that's a really critical distinction, that how you feel powerless and the truth about you, you're not powerless, they're very different things, but because the feeling can be so dominant, the person falls for it as an illusion and thinks it's true. And so part of my work in helping them grow is to show them that there are lots of things they can do in that moment that are safe and that will change the dynamic. Many people who get bullied repeatedly think that if they fight back it will automatically get worse, and that's not true. There are unsafe ways of fighting back, absolutely, that will leave them more wobbly and off balance than the strategies they're using to contain the situation, and which would be very unwise to do. But equally, there are some really safe, very effective ways of putting issues back to the bully that create consequences for them in the moment that reduce the aggression. They don't actually escalate it, and that's what they need to learn.
Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely great. I mean, I really hear what you're saying. What I hear a lot from clients I work with is the should dynamic. They go into themselves and there's this should. Well, that other person should be doing this and shouldn't be doing that.
Mm.
Which is not terribly helpful.
But not helpful at all. No.
Yes, so tell me about some of the unsafe ways that people try to deal with bullies.
I think that if someone's natural style is to contain, to be more submissive than assertive, and to be more passive than active, one of the worst things they can do is try and be aggressive, because what will come over is the wobble. They'll come over slightly panicked, wobbling, using behaviour which is unsafe and they're not skilled at using, and it'll be worse than ever, because what most bullies do is take the energy or the emotion of the person active and playing it back to them.
Yeah.
So if it's someone who's more submissive, more passive and more containing, you start to go, right, well, I'm not being treated like that, or conversion of that, then the bully will just play that straight back to them, and they'll feel even worse than them never having done that in the first place. So I think that's a really unwise one. Another very unwise thing to do is after the event to go and complain to the bully about what they did.
Because most
bullies are incredibly skilled at making the problem you, the person who is complaining. So they will say, well, why didn't you say that at the time? What are you telling me now for? What are you talking about? If you can't handle a conversation with me, you need to learn some skills. I've got work to do. Bye. And they'll just end it instantly. And the person has then lost power again. Because what they've actually done is go to the bully on the assumption that if I point out to you what you've done that's unreasonable, out of goodwill, you'll stop doing it. And that is to fundamentally misunderstand the motivation of the bully who doesn't have any goodwill towards you, towards the person they're targeting, and isn't going to listen to things they might have done wrong. They will make it your fault for complaining. And perhaps the third one is to look for support from those around you if the bullying is happening in front of others. And in that moment, most of my clients who've reported doing this have found that people turn away. They look away and something's happening. They become very still and silent, they turn a blind eye, and that is devastating for people. That at the moment of being bullied, in other words, at the moment of being abused at work, the people who've just observed it carry on as if nothing happened, and that betrayal is often more painful than the bullying itself.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I remember when I had that scenario, and I was just thinking, wow, what is with you guys? You are so craven.
And I think people are frightened that they will be targeted next, so they stay quiet.
With good reason, I'd have thought. Certainly in the scenario I was in, that's exactly what happened. So what does the bully get out of it?
That's a really interesting question. I think that two of the dynamics, there are three that I can talk about. One is what they get out of it is an avenue for letting some of their jealousy out to play. They're an avenue for letting some of their envy out to play, and a very misguided avenue for addressing some of their fear. So let's take each of those in order, starting with the last one. I think one of the motivations for bullying is the very genuine fear that the bully thinks they are failing at their job, or that the person they're targeting is better than them. If they think they're failing, there are a number of extremely misguided strategies they could use. And in saying this, the obvious thing to do is to learn the skills they need and the personal qualities they need and the interpersonal skills to manage and lead effectively to enable them to succeed at their job. But they're not doing that. Instead, they're taking a very misguided route of trying to create a scapegoat. So if they could take the focus off their own perceived or actual failure, and maybe they're not perceiving, they're not actually failing, but they think they might, and place it somewhere else to get everyone else looking at how the person they're targeting is underperforming, is poor at the job, makes mistakes, is a danger to the business, is a danger to clients or patients. If they can do that successfully, then they don't themselves have to be subject to scrutiny, either their own or other people's. But of course it doesn't work. If you are actually about to fail or think you are, you will continue to fail or not, regardless of whether you're bullying someone else. It's a very misguided strategy, but I have seen that motivation. Two other dynamics which I regularly see are jealousy and envy. For me, jealousy is the motivation to destroy the good that someone else has worked for so they don't have it anymore. And that good could be their reputation at work, their popularity around the office, their impending promotion, their impending bonus payment if they're an organisation that pays like that. And what the bully's trying to do is undermine that person's self-esteem and belief in their own competence enough that they start to underperform or perform less well and are therefore not going to succeed in getting all the things that rightly should come to them. And that somehow enables the bully to feel better about themselves and to feel that they are less of a second-class citizen in relation to this person. The other motive I've seen is envy, and I define envy as, in the context of bullying again, as the desire to acquire the good that somebody else has earned for oneself. So one of the motives here might be to discredit a colleague so that the bully can take their share of the client or a part of their staff and make theirs bigger, for instance. And I think those are three things that bullies get out of it. A fourth one is to create a very false, but to them momentarily satisfying illusion that they have more influence and power than they actually do have. For me, part of my philosophy is that power is, in the sense of bullies thinking of it, is a complete illusion, doesn't really exist. You can have influence, you can be skillful, you can be very effective at your job, but that doesn't make you powerful. Those are skills and ways of being that you've learned and acquired through hard work and endeavour, and they bring rewards. Not make you powerful in the way that I think a lot of bullies think of power, as in unassailably better than others. I don't think that actually exists. So one of the things they're trying to do, I think, is to create a power base which will help them feel safe, and it doesn't, of course. So when it's failed the first time, they try again, but they do it more, or they try again and again and again, and to do more and more and more, because you can never create an internal sense of safety and comfort with oneself by actually behaving abusively towards others. That is a nonsense, but I have seen that motivation too.
So have I many, many times, and it really deserves to be repeated because it's so true that you can never create an internal sense of safety by being abusive towards other people.
No.
But people do it all the time. In the emotionally abusive intimate relationships, there is also the control issue. Power and control go hand in hand, obviously, because they work for the bully. Is the control thing there as well in the workplace bullying or not?
Yes.
It is.
Yes, I think it can be, definitely.
Mm.
And again, it's an illusion because you can't really control somebody else. All you can ever do is have influence over your own behaviour. What you can do is limit somebody because they're so frightened that they outwardly comply with you, inwardly deceiving. And the outward compliance is an illusion of control because it's not a choice to work with you. It's compliance out of fear, and that isn't genuine influence at all. I think many bodies muddle up influence and control, and they think they're the same thing, and they're not.
Yes. Yeah, they don't really have much of a sense of the power of the softer skills, do they? But
No,
the strength for softer skills.
I call them professional skills because I think they're incredibly challenging skills. The workplace is an environment, and perhaps the only environment of your life as an adult, where you have no choice whatsoever over who you are working with, sometimes very closely and very closely structured relationships day after day after day. And often people spend more time at work than at home. And so you haven't made the choice who will be in your team most of the time, unless you're a manager who has the opportunity to self-select teams. And that's very unusual. Mostly, as a manager, you come in and there are people already there who you will now be managing. And as a team member, you get a job and you're put in the team. You probably don't know the other people you're working with. And so the skills of being able to find productive ways of working with people who may have totally different values to you and be non-bullying is challenging enough. But if they've got bullying behaviour as well, that's even more challenging. And most people go to work without ever having been trained or coached in the very specific behaviour they need to use to protect themselves from a bully. And so many people aren't, well, now a lot of people learn it and are not targeted because they're naturally assertive enough that they know how to defend themselves. But very often I find that people who are successfully targeted over a long period of time, they don't know how to use that behaviour yet. They can learn it, and they do learn it quickly. And in the way that I work, setting up the role plays is critical because my ACT colleagues will recreate exactly the behaviour of the bully to the point where my client will regularly say to me, like, my heart's pounding, I feel like I'm back in the room. And I can help them use behaviour which preserves them, which is self-protective and critically, which creates consequences for the bully. And most bullies, when they're successfully, safely confronted, crumble very quickly because they're so unused to it.
That makes an awful lot of sense. I know in my own work that you can talk about scenarios and talk about scenarios, and women get it, my clients get it, but it's only when you actually go through a specific scenario that they really feel it. And that's a huge distinction.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a big, big difference between intellectual knowledge about what I should or could be doing and actually doing it in a real situation. And then, and it's actually recognizing in the moment of one of those role plays when I'm able to say that behavior, when you did that, I know that felt very natural and comfortable and was very well intentioned, but it was completely the wrong thing. Let's just ask fully why. I then go to the actor and I say, right, what was so important for you about that moment? And the actor can say, well, it was just so easy. You gave me a very easy in to say something nasty back to you. And they don't realize that they have actually created that opening, and that had they used a different approach in that moment, they could have created a different outcome. One of the principles which I write down when I put on a piece of paper is that what you believe or think about yourself has a big impact on the behavior you use, which has a big impact on the outcomes that you create for yourself. So if we take the middle of those, which is your behavior, and change that, that will create a different outcome, and then you can go back and reassess what you think and feel and believe about yourself. That whole dynamic is a big part of the book, Free Yourself from Workplace Bullying, because I think that much of the battle of people who've been subject to bullying behaviour is in their own minds, that they start to believe things about themselves which are not true, and then they are bullying themselves and beating themselves up in the 23 and a half hours a day when they're not in the presence of the bully. The bullying continues inside their own head. And so right at the start of the book, I want people to confront what they think about themselves, what they've come to believe about themselves, and start to replace those thoughts and beliefs with really accurate ones, which are part of the equipment they need to be effective when they then start to confront the bully in other ways as well.
Yeah, I love this thing about most of the bullying happens inside their own head. Again, that's one of the issues that I have with clients. They are often riddled with self-loathing, whether it's other people's loathing that's been projected onto them or whatever it is. It really, really cripples them, and it, as you say, most of the bullying goes on within their own head because most of the negative stuff that they hear and absorb is actually being played again and again inside their own heads, and they don't get it. So, how do you pick up on this? if it's what you've been routinely doing?
I think there is a distinction there between the work that you do and the work that I do. Just listening to that description, the person who's bullying your client is someone who they could realistically expect to love them. And that's not what's happening.
Once upon a time, yes.
But the fact is they've stayed with that person and that's created a lot of self-loathing. I think that for my client group, their income depends on them continuing in that job at the moment.
Mm.
And their self-esteem pointed so much that finding another job has become an impossibility, and yet they have to work with that person every day. So it's slightly different in that they quite reasonably could expect to go to work and be safe, but not. Leaving is often about, well, if I leave, how on earth can I present myself effectively somewhere else when I feel like this? And if I leave without another job, how do I pay my bill and look after my kids and so on? And so I think that I'm not aware of clients having a lot of self-loathing. They have a huge amount of anger and often towards their employer for having done nothing to protect them and for having recruited this person and for allowing them to continue to behave like that for however long it's been. And so the anger is something that we need to then start to work with, because often that starts to come out medically. It affects the way they sleep, the way they relate to themselves, and it becomes an immense drain on their energy.
Yeah. Does that anger not often translate into sort of, well, I'm probably not that good anyway?
Yes, and they can start to doubt themselves. Even people who are really effective at what they do and technically very able can start to think, well, perhaps I'm not then. Perhaps I was deluding myself. And they can think that they're not very effective. And a really skillful bully will very carefully drop in the suggestion that you're not doing very well. One of the chapters in the book is, what do you do if the person who's bullying you is your manager and they're bullying you so effectively your performance drops? And then they use the fact that your performance is dropping as another excuse to now use organisationally derived sanctions to take you down a competency route because you're no longer effective in your role, when the reason you're not effective in your role is because you're being bullied. And unfortunately, that's quite a common tactic that a skilled bully will use.
Yes.
And so there's guidance in the book about what to do about that.
Yes, so you're talking before about safe ways of dealing with bullying, and this is really beautiful because it's a time when you think there isn't a safe way as often as not.
And there is.
Yeah.
And there always is. There isn't a single person I've worked with where we haven't found ways that are safe for them with their personality and character and where they are in their life, safe within that dynamic and actually effective at changing it. And some of them are very simple things. For instance, bullies are terrific at being indirect and evasive. So they'll make a sort of unclear, fuzzy criticism of the person's performance, such as, oh, I just don't think you're up to the mark anymore. And for a lot of people who are being bullied, that echoes with what they think about themselves. So suddenly they've gone in and they're thinking, oh, no, I'm not good at what I'm... And it causes immense anxiety and self-doubt. In the moment, if I can coach my client to think, the next time they're given a fuzzy, indirect, critical comment, see it as a tactic, not as a truth, and come straight back with, okay, well, that's fine. You've just said you think that I'm not good at my job. So what I'd like you to do is to write down and commit to paper your criticisms of my performance, and I'll have a meeting with you and me and my manager, and we'll talk them through. And most bullies will go, oh, I haven't got time to do that. I'm telling you, you're not good. And you can say, well, that's fine. You are entitled to your opinion. But if you're going to say that, you have to be prepared to back it up. So please put it down on paper and we'll talk about it. But until you're able to, I'm going to get on with my work now. And they leave. And it works. The boy's left thinking, I couldn't injure her self-esteem. And now she wants me to actually commit to paper. And they won't do it. Another one would be to directly disagree with them. To show simply that you know your own mind and you're unafraid to disagree, because it's the fear that prevents the person from putting an opinion out there, which makes it more difficult for the bully to come back at them. So an example would be a bully saying, I think you handled that meeting dreadfully. And my client could say, okay, I've heard you just say that you think I handled the meeting dreadfully. I actually disagree. Completely disagree. Here are three things I just did. If anything, I would say your aggression and your overly aggressive approach were very unhelpful. Shall we talk about those?
Yes, that would really upset a bully, I can see that.
Yes, it would.
Yes, oh yeah, I know, and these workplace bullies, do you think that's how they conduct their whole life, or do you think they just go into a different place at work, or is it, does it vary from person to person?
I think it varies very much, and I think also one of the characteristics that I've seen with very effective bullies is they can be incredibly nice to everyone they're not targeting, which makes it much more difficult for the person they're targeting to complain effectively about them, because nobody would believe them, and then they would think it's they who are causing trouble for the bully. So I think it varies hugely. There are some people who I've worked with who are always aggressive, and they only have the one style and they use it with everybody, but there are also those who are much more sophisticated than that.
Yes, and it's kind of baffling if you're confronted with a sophisticated bully. I mean, it's almost easier if it's one of the one style for every occasion.
It is and it isn't, because if the person is the one style for all occasions and they've managed to intimidate everybody, nobody will stand up to them because they're so effective at what they do. If it's the be nasty to the person they're targeting in a one-to-one situation only, but making cups of tea in the open plan office so everyone sees how nice they are, that carries its own particular threat and its own particular challenge. I think they're both challenging in different ways. But the critical thing for me is not what do other people think of this person who's bullying me, but how do I have them in the moment of an attack? Because that is where the rubber hits the road. That's how I really self-esteem. That's how I learn that I can handle this person. It's how I give them something to think about, which changes the bullying dynamic because I'm no longer colluding with it completely, intentionally, but you know, it's a two-way street. So if I can take my part of the street and make it work for my advantage, it changes the dynamic. And while most bullies will never give an indication in the moment that they have been rattled, they hide it, they have been rattled, and it shows the next time that my client meets them, they're slightly unsure. They're not on the front foot. They don't come in with confidence. They're waiting to see what happens. And in that moment, my client has to maintain their new assertive persona. They can't start to feel sorry for the bully and think, oh, you poor thing, because then they give their power away. They have to only use that one style, which I coach them to adopt, always, every single time they're in that person's company.
Yeah. Again, that chimes with something I find too, that if there is one style of behaviour that works, you don't really have a choice. You have to use that. But I was going to ask you, what are the outcomes you get as a result of working with you? How do clients' lives change?
I think one of the main things that changes is that situations at work which are potentially crushingly difficult for them to handle, which affect their thinking about themselves, their performance, their self-esteem, their capacity to sleep, their eating patterns, their energy levels, and their enjoyment of their life outside work, all negatively, become situations which they can handle often with ease. And they discover resources within themselves which they never knew they had, which they were unconsciously blocking themselves from using. Resources which enable them to be influential when under attack, to be resilient in the face of aggression, to find the right interpersonal strategy, to handle a moment which, before they worked with me, was incredibly challenging, even defeating for them, they now handle well. They learn a lot more about themselves and what motivates them to be submissive and passive, and they start to overhaul those attitudes and thoughts and feelings about themselves and replace them with much more self-serving, but that has the wrong connotation to it, self-liberating ways of being that make them influential, more credible, more assertive, better able to handle conflict, and better able to use the personal power which they were not using, so that they can do their job effectively, protect themselves well, and feel much, much better about themselves. Most people's self-esteem plummets when they've been bullied. And I will measure that at the start of the program, and we measure again at the end. And often people have moved up by 2, 3, and 4 standard deviations because they've started to have confidence in themselves again, that things which defeated them no longer do, and that then sets up whole new ways of learning, which happen when they're not with me, where they think, right, well, I did do that well, okay, I'll try this, and they start to learn different and better ways of interacting with people who, before the coaching program, really frightened them, intimidated them, and brought out the most submissive behaviour in them, made them vulnerable and confused, had them on the back foot, and now none of that happens. Instead, they engage, they're proactive, they're confident, they have a completely different energy, and they win in situations where they're perpetually lost, but they don't win through aggression, they win through skill.
So, I know enough about you, Ariane, to know that you're an extremely modest person. And if I were to translate that into my speak, I would say that it sounds like you totally transformed their working lives so that they can really soar where they were struggling before. Would that be roughly true?
I would say I'm a catalyst to enable them to create
that. Of course, you're incredibly modest, but... But there is significant change that goes on in their quality of life.
Yes, there is, definitely.
And presumably in their level of achievement as well.
Yes, absolutely. And also in the amount of effort they have to put in. When you're being bullied, you put a huge amount of effort in, and often it doesn't achieve a lot for you.
Yeah.
When they've learnt a new way of being at work, they don't have to put in that much effort because they're much more skilled and they pick up the right tool at the right moment and things are a lot easier.
So you're not saying it, but I will, and you can shoot me for it, but it's really powerful stuff.
Yes, it is. I say yes it is, because at the end of most of my coaching programs, all of them actually, I ask my clients for feedback, and I know how much they have. I know from the things they say to me that for some of them it is the best thing they've ever done in their life. For others, it's made a massive contribution to their welfare and their well-being, and it has impact in the life outside work. So although what we talk about is the workplace, it has a knock-on effect in the way that they feel about themselves as a person, and that creates a more fulfilling life outside work, and it increases their well-being outside work as well.
So it's truly, truly massive. So I could go on talking about this with you forever because I'm absolutely fascinated, but we do actually need to stop. So let me just say once again that you are the author of, I've got it in front of me, Free Yourself from Workplace Bullying, out in May. You're also the author of a suite of other books on handling challenging dynamics in the workplace, and a niche book for coaches. And you, when you're not working and helping people have transform their quality of life, you live on a non-commercial farm in West Yorkshire.
I keep sheep.
Yes, I know. Who you're turning into tigers when they start to assert themselves. Or maybe not. But
Free Yourself from Workplace Bullying is out at the end of May. It's available now to pre-order from Amazon.
Yes, and it is a truly great read. It really is really inspiring. It is, I think, essential reading for most people, if not everybody, who is in a workplace, because it's unlikely anybody's going to get through their working life without encountering bullying. And there are a few bullies out there. So, Ariane, is there any question I should have asked you? Anything that you would like to add before we stop?
I think that for anybody who's being bullied, who feels absolutely overwhelmed and who thinks I will never be the same again, something in me has changed for the worse forever and I don't recognise myself. That is an immensely toxic place to be, and as soon as somebody starts to feel like that and therefore think like that, that sets up its own energy and it can be a very quick downward slide. And I would say to anyone listening to this who identifies with that description, it is not true that you will never be the same again. It is not true that you cannot recover, and it is not true that you lost something forever. That is how you feel, and you can recover not just back to where you were before, but be a more effective person, more skillful, more well-resourced, know yourself better, and be able to build better connections with a wider range of people if you are able to challenge yourself to identify what it is, however well-intentioned, that is blocking you from those resources and gather them up so that you can use them in your day-to-day. And that truly is something which you can achieve. Even if you don't believe me when you hear this, it can be true even for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So nobody's broken. Nobody's reached the end of the line.
No, not at all.
Brilliant. I totally hear that. So if you would like more information, please go to www.odeassociates, that's odeassociates.com, or Amazon to get Ariane's book. Ariane, thank you very much for speaking with me today, and good luck with the book. I'm sure it will get all the attention it deserves.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the amazing contribution that you're making to making the workplace a much better place.
Thank you.
Lovely to speak to you. Bye.
Bye.